Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, February 1st, 2015. This is episode 1158. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter free with a 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. Our home theater guru coming up at half past the hour. I'm here with Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, who is dressed unaccountably. She's dressed for the occasion in a football jersey for Iowa State.
University of Iowa.
Buckeyes. That's, you're a Buckeye.
Hawkeye.
You're a Buckhawk. I don't know.
There's no bucking in there.
You're a Hawkeye.
Well, it's the only football-y thing I have. And I
no,
thought,
it's great.
Well,
I should have worn my Niners jersey.
It's Super Sunday, so why not?
Yeah. Excited. Big game is this afternoon, the Super Bowl, and we're all excited about all of that. But we're going to do a radio show between now and then, so don't you worry. Lots to talk about. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can Skype in. That's okay. We take calls from anywhere. But just Skype that number. Use your Skype out credits and Skype that number. Won't cost you anything. Won't cost you any credits because it's a toll-free number. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Have you ever Heather purchased a Kickstarter anything? You know what Kickstarter is, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
I think most people know that Kickstarter is really kind of interesting. It's something that's very much of the internet era. It is a place that people can go, Kickstarter.com, to raise money for. Originally, it was to be raising money for creative projects, novels, movies, artworks, that kind of thing. Place for creatives to go and ask patrons. You know, it's kind of like the old patronage system. You know, the Medicis would give money to Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo, I guess it was, to paint paintings, that kind of thing. And the idea was, you know, you love the arts, you love this particular artist, so you help them create something. But then it changed just a little bit. I think the first inkling that it was changing was Pebble watches. This was an idea for a smartwatch in the earliest days of smartwatches. It was actually, you know, even before the Pebble Watch, come to think of it, one of the early Kickstarter projects that was not creative arts, but in fact a product, was a wristband that would hold your iPod Nano. Remember, Apple used to make a square watch-sized Nano. And that was really the beginning of the smartwatch. A lot of people were buying these wristbands to hold their Nanos. I still see people from time to time. I go, is that an iPod Nano? And they go, yeah. Makes a pretty good watch. Which is why probably Apple discontinued it preparatory to their own watch. And that was such a success. And then Pebble Watch raised millions of dollars. That was such a success that Kickstarter has become even better known now for products. People go there. In fact, sometimes, and this is the key on this, and Kickstarter wants you to know this, it's not a store. You're not buying a product. The product may never emerge. It may never happen. And in fact, Kickstarter has started to require people who are making physical objects to, in the video, show an actual prototype instead of a 3D rendering. You know, you have to be closer than just like some crazy idea. And at the end, they have to have a paragraph of risks and challenges that might get in the way of this actually shipping. It's fascinating. And yet, still, projects galore. have raised lots of money, but the latest is kind of back to Kickstarter's original idea. It's a card game. A pretty well-known cartoonist, he does a thing called The Oatmeal. Matthew Inman joined up with a programmer or artist, I guess, Elon Lee from, he'd done the Xbox stuff, and Shane Small also from Xbox and Marvel Comics. The three of them thought of a, wanted to do a card game. They say it's a kitty, get this, a kitty-powered version of Russian roulette. What it really is, if you've ever played, it's like Uno, isn't it? Players take turns drawing cards until someone draws an exploding kitten and loses. Yes, I'm not kidding. In fact, that's the name of it is Exploding Kittens. If you draw an exploding kitten, you lose the game. But the cards in the meantime can help you avoid exploding by peeking at cards before you draw or forcing your opponent to draw multiple cards or shuffling the deck and on and on and on. And so it sounds like a, you know, an okay game. Kind of on the strategic level of maybe Go Fish or War, but it's still, you know. And, you know, pictures of exploding kittens. They thought, if we can raise $10,000, we could produce this. So what they do, and this is typical of Kickstarter, is if you pledge $20, you get a deck. You pledge $35, you get a deck with cards that would not be suitable for kids. I guess they're a little gorier. If you pledge $100, you get a collector's deck. $500, you get what they call the Deck of Legends. You even get a custom card in the Deck of Legends. So they figured, you know, hey, we'll probably get $10,000. They get a month to raise that money. Within 20 minutes, they got a $10,000. Within an hour, they got $100,000. Then $1 million. They have currently raised $5 million for the Exploding Kitten card game. And they're not even halfway to the end of the funding round. This is when it gets silly. Because these guys will get $5 million. They will. They'll have to make, you know, looks like 142 backers. So they'll have to make, you know, a few hundred decks of cards. And they could pocket the rest, which would be roughly, I don't know, $4,900,000. Maybe $4,990,000. They're going to profit. Wow. Get ready for an exploding Kickstarter. I mean, that's crazy. Now, partly I think it's because of Matthew Inman, who is so well known at, as the Oatmeal, and he's beloved. And he, in fact, raised money before for a museum to honor Nikola Tesla, one of the early experimenters in electricity who's kind of not well known. And, you know, he's done some good things. But holy camoly, really? $5 million for a card game? It makes you think, gosh, what could I do on Kickstarter? There's more than Kickstarter now. There's Indiegogo. There's Patreon for people who want to support podcasters and other creative artists. It's really an exploding, if you'll forgive the word, arena. Fascinating. Wow. Think of a card game, quick. Let's do it. This was earnings week, and I suppose it would behoove me to go through the earnings of Facebook and Microsoft, Apple and IBM, all the companies that announced their quarterly earnings. This is Apple's big one because they're announcing the earnings from the holiday buying season, what they call their first quarter. Apple made, this is profit, $18 billion in 3 months, $6 billion a month for 3 months. The most any company has ever made in the history of humankind. This is not a joke. $18 billion profit on $75 billion sales. Almost all of it is, of course, iPhone. In fact, we were looking, you know, you don't really have to look beyond that headline very far, but we were kind of interested to see how the iPad did. How do the iPad do? It don't do good. iPad sales continue to drop. But who cares? Mac sales relatively strong. They're still selling Mac computers. But who cares? Because they sold 75 million iPhones in 3 months, making the largest profit in history, $18 billion. They now have $142 billion cash in the bank. Like they could write a check, cash in the bank. Like if Tim Cook comes up to you and said, you need a loan? Yeah. How much you want? Oh, I'll take, I don't know, $142 billion. Yeah, here, let me just write that check out. It's good. It's in the bank. Eight. The mind reels. Of course, so do the calculators. People immediately calculate. Well, how much a second is that? Whew. 88. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, that tech guy. The tech guy. You know, the one over here. What could you do with $18 billion? What could you do with $142 billion? That's what Apple's looking at as a stack of cash. Yay high. You imagine the yay. $142 billion in the bank, $18 billion profit this quarter, making it the most successful company, the most profitable company of all time. And, of course, the ones they beat were all oil companies, basically. Russia's Gazprom, Exxon, the big, you know, companies that are pumping stuff out of the ground that's worth, like, solid gold. Those are the only companies that were even giving them a challenge. Certainly no technology companies, even close. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, the Hawkeye, is here, and she has lined up some wonderful callers on this Super Sunday.
Sure have. Got Ron in Charlotte, North Carolina, wondering about the advisability of switching phones. Switching teams, as it were.
Switch teams? Never! Hey, Ron, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, pretty good. Hey, Leo, I'm a Windows phone user, and I faithfully watch the Windows Weekly Show with you and Paul.
Thank you.
And I know Windows is Microsoft's coming out with Windows 10 and the new software.
Yep.
But everywhere I look, everybody's pushing, you know, the Apple phone and Apple Pay and the Android phone. In fact, my big bank that I think you feature is dropping support for the Windows phone.
Yeah, this was a big announcement and very disappointing. Both Bank of America and was it Chase was the other bank?
I believe so.
Yeah, have stopped developing their app for Windows Phone. That's a very big blow to Microsoft.
And I was wondering, I mean, should I wait? Your opinion, should I wait or maybe jump ship or whatever and go to, like, over to the Apple since they're doing the Apple Pay or...
Well, do you really want to use now? I presume you could, you know, many of the Windows phones, including that Lumia 1500, 1520, which I'm holding right now, have NFC in them. But I think if the banks abandon it, that's kind of an issue, isn't it? It doesn't look good for Windows Phone. And yet, I got to tell you, and you know this, it's a great operating system. It's gorgeous, beautifully designed, very functional, easy to use. The only thing Microsoft did wrong, probably, and by the way, the hardware is stunning. Some of the best cameras in the phone marketplace are on these Nokia Lumias, formerly Nokia Lumias, that Microsoft now owns. But Microsoft has promised that if your phone, your Windows phone, runs Windows Phone 8.1, it will run Windows 10, and they'll give you a free upgrade this fall. I'm excited about that. But I think what happened, Microsoft was late to the game. And by the time Microsoft started playing, the other two big players were halfway around the board. And I'm talking Apple and Android, and particularly Samsung, but Android in general and Apple. And there was just no way they could catch up. And part of this is because developers then have to develop for it. And it's BlackBerry is, by the way, even farther behind, even though they've made smartphones longer than even Apple. But they couldn't keep up. They didn't pay attention to the market. They, you know, both Microsoft and BlackBerry made a fatal mistake. When the iPhone came out in 2007, they laughed. Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, literally said, "Are you kidding me? $700? Are you kidding me? No one," he said, literally, "no one's going to buy the iPhone." Today, Apple's worth much more than Microsoft, completely surpassed Microsoft in market worth. They have twice as much money in the bank, and they're the most profitable company of all time, and it's because of one thing, the iPhone. Now, I don't fault them. Who would have known in 2007 that the iPhone would be the thing? Well, one company, Samsung, did, and they immediately copied it. And that kept them in the game long enough. They're not doing very well now. They're starting to get cannibalized. But that kept them in the game long enough to get developers developing for Android. And it meant that it was really a two-horse race. I wouldn't dump your Nokia phone. Which one do you have?
I got the 920.
Yeah, 920 is a beautiful phone.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, it does what I want, but it's just everywhere you go, everybody's pushing the other product.
Well, yeah, and you know, unless when the day comes and it doesn't do what you want, then that's the day you're going to have to say, well, maybe it's time to go somewhere. And it will be either an iPhone or an Android phone that does. I use all of them because that's my job. And frankly, I love the 1520. I think the 920 is equally great camera, great hardware, really a well thought out operating system. Microsoft had the luxury, because they were late, of looking at what the other guys had done and really rethinking what a phone interface should be like. And I think they've done a great job of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. I just don't know what to say about it. I say you probably are going to end up dumping it. If your bank has dumped it, then it's just a matter of time because you want to be able to use not just tap to pay. You want to be able to do home banking.
Right.
And, you know, I could do that on my Android and iPhone. It's fabulous to be able to log into my bank, transfer funds, pay bills, all of that from the phone. And you see the banks advertising like crazy.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So that's what happens with Windows Phone. It's great until there's the app you need. Now, Instagram just started developing for it. That's good. But a lot of companies have kind of let their app kind of fade. For instance, Audible, which made a great Windows Phone app, and I was very happy. They do audiobooks, and they're a sponsor of some of our podcasts. They made a great Windows Phone app, but they haven't done a thing to it in over a year. And unfortunately, it's just going to eventually stop working. And it's certainly not going to take advantage of new features. So when that happens, you know, for instance, Audible doesn't even update the new books in here. It's like these are the last update, November 2013. You feel like, boy, this is just, and there are a lot of apps like that in the Windows Phone store. So
right.
I would just say you'll know because you'll say, I need to use my Chase app or I need Tap to Pay. Nobody yet has implemented Tap to Pay to the degree that you need it.
Right.
A lot of the stores I go to use it, but I haven't used it yet. And even though I have all my phones support it, except, you know, so I feel like that's not a game changer. But I do feel like eventually you're going to say, yeah, I got to go. And I would think Android would be a better choice for Windows Phone folks than Apple. Apple is not a good experience for people who are used to something more customizable and powerful. On the other hand, the cameras on the iPhone are very, very good. You'll know.
Okay.
It is sad, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, I wish more people would jump on the bandwagon, but I guess not.
But you got to get the first. It's not consumers, not buyers. And that's people say, why don't you recommend the Windows Phone more? Well, because it's not us that have to take the hit. It's developers first. You know, that's what Steve Ballmer said. If people don't write software for it, or they abandon it. I think that's a death blow. Chase and Bank of America both this week announcing we're not going to do it anymore. And remember, these companies have to make secure apps. They have to constantly work on them. Audible could just say, well, I'm not going to develop anymore. It's an Amazon company. I imagine Amazon's done that with all their apps. We'll just leave. They're good enough. And then just kind of fade away. Those are death blows. That, in the long run, I can't. Unless Microsoft puts a lot of money out there to do this, I don't see it happening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Todd is in Topeka, Kansas, our next caller. Hi, Todd.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Got married on Thursday. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little wedding. No big deal.
Well, good for you.
I don't know what else to say. My lovely bride, Lisa, and I, we eloped. We didn't tell anybody. Everybody knew we were engaged, but we snuck out of here and said, we're going on a little vacation. It was her birthday, so it was a good excuse. What can I do for you?
Well, my question is, I'm got rewarded for my holiday spending at a big box store, and so I've got some reward points.
Nice.
To use.
Nice.
And what I'm looking at is they have a WD MyCloud mirror that I'm wondering if that's something that you would suggest that we put in for the house. We've got several laptops. We've got iPads, iPhones, that kind of stuff. And I think it does have two drives in it, but they mirror each other, so you have a like a NAS RAID 1 backup. And is that good? And can you use that for Macs and PCs? Do you know?
Yeah. So it is a NAS, technically, a network-attached storage, although it's really designed to be more of an appliance because it's from Western Digital and it's sold in big-box stores, and they kind of don't expect it to be sold to geeky types. I like it that it's dual drives. That means if one drive fails, you don't lose your data. So it's kind of a backup for your home network, but it's backed up itself in a way. Now, remember, on-site backup like this is still... You know, if the house burns down, you know, it's a good idea to have offsite as well. But I'm not going to – you understand that. It will work with Mac or PC because the way all of these systems work is with a file system that is kind of independent of computer hardware. Okay. So that's a good way to do it. Western Digital makes the drives, and so they've increasingly got into this space. It doesn't have as many features as a traditional network-attached storage. It's basically a backup solution. And by the way, it does connect, I see, to Dropbox, which means or other cloud solutions, which means you can also use it for off-site backup of the most important stuff. It also has a feature which I really like, and not all of the devices like this do that. When you first set it up, you can hook it up to the computer directly and make the and copy the stuff over there directly, which is a lot faster than over the network, and then put it out on the network. That's a nice feature. A lot of network attached storage does not do that. I have not used one, and this is a fairly new product from Western Digital. I've used some of their other cloud solutions. They make fine cloud solutions. I generally use kind of more high end stuff from companies like Synology. And Netgear, but this looks, you know, just looking at it, you know, and I see no reason to stay away from it. How much are they charging and how much storage do you get?
Well, I'm looking at the 4 terabytes, which would pass that since it's a mirrored drive.
Yeah, that's deceptive, isn't it? They should show you the storage capacity, not the total capacity.
Well, I think reading through it, you can set it up, was it RAID 0, where it's just, it used the total amount.
Oh, okay, so you get the choice. That's good.
Right. But right now they have it on for $291, and I think I've got like $140, $150 worth of credit.
$291 for 4 terabytes? That's amazing. Yeah. I think, and it, you know, now the other thing to listen, and I don't know if they'll have one set up at the big box store, listen to the fan.
Okay.
Because these things tend to be loud. If you've got two drives in there, they're making noise, and then there is a fan in this. And so just they show it. It's a little deceptive in the living room on the shelf. It's probably going to be too noisy for that.
Yeah, it's not a piece of art, I don't think.
Yeah, consider where you're putting it, and it's got to be near. It should be near your router. So, you don't want a long Ethernet cord coming out of snaking out of one room into the other.
Yeah.
So
well,
just
we've got
consider
a cabinet that.
Good.
You know, our electronic cabinet, so it would fit in there. So I think that would work good.
I think this is better, frankly, better than nothing, a lot better than nothing, and pretty good solution.
Right.
Western Digital makes the hard drives. They've been doing stuff like this for a long time, the MyBook and so forth. I think it's a great idea. And at that price, wow. That's a lot less than a more powerful NAS would be. Here, what are you missing? Well, a NAS will have the ability to add plugins to do more stuff. For instance, a media server plugins, Plex or iTunes or Windows, more sophisticated cloud backup options and so forth. This is a consumer device with simple consumer interface. I think this is fine.
Yeah, I want something that's user friendly.
Yeah.
That's
what this will be. If you want to run it in RAID 0, Scary RAID, which gives you twice the storage, just make sure you've got it's a backup. Make sure it's not the only place you're putting stuff.
Well, that's the older laptop, the MacBook we have. It's getting kind of full of music, video, pictures, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I'd like to get that off of there to kind of
then doing it in redundant RAID, RAID 1 is probably a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, well, that sounds good. I do have one quick question, if you can give me some hints on. My daughter's a senior in high school right now, and she's wanting to go to school engineering next year.
That's great.
We've kind of switched over to Mac, but I think they'd use a lot of PCs for the software that they need to use School of Engineering.
That's right.
Do you have any suggestions for a good, powerful laptop for college kids.
Yeah. And I would, by the way, contact the school for a couple of reasons. She should do this or you could do it. First of all, to find out what their recommendations for minimum hardware are.
Okay.
And if they say Mac or Windows, that's fine. You know, you can run Windows on a Mac, so you don't have to go out and get a Windows machine.
Right.
You can dual boot the Mac. Secondarily, you should ask them if they have any student discounts, because often the college bookstore will have a pretty good deal.
Okay. When you, and I know you can run Windows on a Mac. Does that slow down? Or I mean,
no. So there's two ways to run Windows on a Mac. You can run it bare to the metal using Boot Camp. Then it really boots up as a Windows machine. It is as fast as any Windows machine. It's a really good Windows machine because Apple now uses all the same components as any PC manufacturer. So it's an Intel processor. It's fast hard drives. So that's fine. You can also do it in emulation, which is a little slower, but then you don't. When you start up as a Macintosh and you open the emulator. That's very handy for quick access to Windows programs that don't need a lot of horsepower or RAM. It's also handy for trying versions of Windows. For instance, people are running the new Windows 10, which isn't out till this fall, but they want to try the preview. Often do it in a virtual machine, even on a Mac. That way, you know, there's no risk, no muss, no fuss. When you're done with it, you just delete it. So it's not a bad solution. If she already has a Mac, I'd certainly look at that.
Well, she does. She's got an iPad and she's got an iPhone. But like I said, we've kind of switched over to Mac several years ago. And
you got to call the school because they may say, you know, she has to have a PC. Or, you know, it's more about support because every university now has an IT department for the students, which is so great. And so they may say, no, we're not going to support a Mac. Or most likely they will. Nowadays, nobody really makes a distinction. If you want a great Mac laptop, PC laptop, I just bought the Dell, the new XPS 13, which is a 13-inch screen, but because they have very little bezel around it, it fits an 11-inch body. It is, it's a great keyboard, great trackpad, a wonderful screen. It is the nicest Windows machine I've used, and I've used some really nice ones. Very happy with this. And that is the one I bought with an i5. It'd probably be adequate for her, although you might need a bigger hard drive. It's only a 128-gig hard drive, and that was a little pricey. It's Apple prices. It's about $1,150.
Well, that's one of the things I think on the MyCloud Mirror. I think you can back up over the internet. So I don't know if she can use that when she's in college to back up some of her stuff.
Oh, that would be very cool, wouldn't it? Hey, good luck. That's really great. Congratulations, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at FreshBooks. And I mean it when I say good friends. FreshBooks bailed me out big time when I was still a freelancer, going back and forth to Canada, doing invoices. If you're a small business or a freelancer and you do your own invoices, you fire up Microsoft Word or Excel and you put in the stuff, you probably put it off because it's such a pain, or you just grumble when you have to sit down at the end of the month and do those invoices. I did, and I put it off. I'm not proud of this, but I would bill people, you know, 5 invoices at once, 6 invoices at once. They didn't like that much. That's why I was so pleased to find FreshBooks. I want you to visit FreshBooks.com/tech guy, FreshBooks.com/tech guy. If you do invoices or you need to do some accounting, highly recommend it. FreshBooks is cloud accounting made, I guess the best way to describe it, cloud accounting made simple. So it starts with the invoicing. But then they've got these apps you put on your iPhone or your Android device, and now you can track time and hours, put it right into the invoice. It's designed from the ground up for entrepreneurs, for small businesses. You can take pictures. If you bill for expenses, you can take pictures of the receipts and get them right into the invoice automatically. It's so great. FreshBooks customers spend less time on paperwork. In fact, they've done studies up to 2 days a month. They free up to 2 days a month to focus on the things they love and not the paperwork. I'm really a fan. If you want to try, and by the way, if you ever need help, they have a great support team ready anytime for you. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. You can try it free for 30 days. It will scale as you grow. So will FreshBooks. You can add clients. You can even add staff. I just love it. Make sure if they ask you, how did you hear about us? You say, I heard about you on the Tech Guy Show. FreshBooks.com/tech guy These guys have nailed it. They have really, it's beautiful, it's elegant, it's easy, and you will just love it. And you, by the way, you'll get paid on average 5 days faster because you're using FreshBooks. Clients want to pay you. You just have to make it easy for them. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Peter in Brooklyn. Hi, Peter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. First off, congratulations to you and Lisa.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
Leo, I have a problem, actually. I guess I'm a technology nut. I have a Nexus 6, as you know.
Yep.
iPhone 6 Plus, and I just got a Droid Turbo.
I have an excuse. It's a flimsy excuse, but I have an excuse. I have to buy all these to review them so I can recommend them. But what's your excuse?
My excuse is that I love the Twit Network, and I got addicted as well.
Wow, that's great. Hey, that's great. And all of those are great phones, aren't they? And each in their own way, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The problem I have is I had the iPhone 6's nano SIM, and what I would do is, like, let's say with the Nexus 6, I would pop it out of the iPhone, put it in the Nexus 6.
Yeah.
Everything worked great.
Yeah.
With the Droid Turbo, I couldn't get LTE to work when I was on the phone. So I went to Verizon. I made sure I had the update on the Motorola side. I went to the Verizon, and they told me it was the SIM card. So now they give me a nano SIM that works specifically for the Droid Turbo. When I take it out, let's say I want to use the iPhone 6 that day.
Yeah.
It works. I get the data. I get the phone.
Are all three phones on Verizon?
Yes, sir.
Okay. But they say that you have to use a special SIM just for the Droid Turbo.
In order to get LTE to work when I'm on, let's say I'm on the phone, I can get my data.
Now, there was an update to the Droid Turbo a few weeks ago to enable VoLTE and to make it compatible with the newer LTE networks. Did you get that update?
I do. I have the update. I even get it once I change the SIM. But my problem is, when I take that SIM out of the Turbo and I put it in the iPhone, I lose visual voicemail.
This is all Verizon's doing, obviously. I have used, oddly enough, a Verizon iPhone on T-Mobile and it works fine. I've used it on AT&T, it works fine. So you can take the SIM out of a Verizon phone. This is because the FCC forced them to do this. And put a SIM from another carrier in there. It's not SIM locked in the SIM slot. But I guess going the other way within the Verizon network doesn't work.
Yeah, that's
I don't know of a fix for that. You just have to follow their rules. They're clearly checking the IMEI number on the SIM and or on the phone, and they're saying, oh, you know, you have to use this SIM with that phone. There's no technical reason for this.
Well, you know what I was going to ask, Leo? Is there an app that I can use that'll give me visual voicemail on iOS and, like, actually, you know, go through my Verizon my Verizon voicemail?
No, because Apple won't allow it. So there are ways to do it, but Apple won't allow it. Because Apple, this is a longstanding policy with Apple. They don't want duplication of key functionality. And they've done this as a deal with the carrier. Started with AT&T. Remember, the iPhone was AT&T only at first, and that was one of the big selling points. We're the only carrier where instead of having to dial, remember this? You had to dial the voicemail number, and then you'd be on the phone, press 7 to delete, 8 to save. It was so annoying. And Apple, that was a breakthrough for Apple. The visual voicemail allowed you, just as it would with any app, to look at your voicemails, play them in any order, delete them, control them, manipulate them, not on the network, not on the phone, but right on the app. And T-Mobile's duplicated that on the T-Mobile system. And now, not just on the iPhone, but on other phones, Verizon's duplicated that as well. But you have to do it their way. And this is typical of Apple. It has to be through the app approved by the carrier and Apple for visual voicemail. Now, Scooter X, you may be able to jailbreak it. Scooter X, what's the name of the with the app that Youmail, Youmail. That's a that's a web-based solution. Not sure.
Would that ring in with my number though, Leo? Like my Verizon account?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, for instance, I use Hangouts, which will do that. But it uses my Google Voice number.
Gotcha.
So Youmail, I would try that. It's kind of a hack because it uses a web interface. And I would bet you what you'll have to do is forward your number to a Youmail number. I'm almost certain that's how it would work. So it's kind of a junky way to do it. You know, what you want is what you get with the carrier's visual voicemail, which is
exactly,
you no longer use the carrier's voicemail at all. It just goes through the app. I would guess that Youmail, like other solutions in this category, you forward your existing number to a Youmail number, a special. In fact, I seem to remember this is how it works, and they take the voicemail and they put it on a website. And I don't know. It doesn't seem ideal, but I give it a try. Give it a try, Peter. And actually get back to me and let me know. We will maybe put this in the show notes as well. And if people have good solutions for visual voicemail that is on the iPhone, on Verizon, but not using the iPhone's visual voicemail or Verizon's visual voicemail, and all this because he wants to mix SIMs up, I would just follow the SIM rules. You can't, because what you want to do is I understand what you want to do. And so this is what I do. I have many phones, but then I will move the SIMs around. I actually have I wrote the number on the back of the SIM so I would know which number the SIM card goes to. I have to say, I think the one way around this is to use your Google Voice, to get a Google Voice number and use Google Voice instead. It's not quite as elegant, and that's what I do. That way, I don't have to keep giving out different phone numbers. I give out one phone number. I have it ring whatever phone or phones I'm using at any given time. It sends me an email with it, kind of bad, but an okay transcription. At least you can understand what's going on. It'll even text me through Hangouts with the transcription. Press a play button. I can listen back to it. This is, to me, the best solution. And this works across all platforms. Works on everywhere. Except Windows Phone, I don't think, is as support yet or ever. 8888 Ask Leo. Nice to talk to you, Peter. Noah in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You're next. Hi, Noah.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, first of all, congratulations on your marriage.
Thank you.
And also, okay, so I have a Dell Inspiron 17R. It's like the mid 2011 model.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got a new Motorola router, and everything else, our smart TVs, our phones, and our tablets work fine on this network. But for some reason, like, ever since I connected my computer to this network, it has run, like, probably a third of the performance it did before.
So the 17R's Wi-Fi is GN. What does it support? I'm running through the stats here on the website. Let me see if I can find out for you. Because it's going to be what happens typically if you put a lower a device that supports the older standard is it downgrades everything to the older standard. So that may be what's happening here. If you have it's probably 802.11n. And if you have an 802.11n device and you put it on an AC network, for instance, you're going to downgrade the performance of the network. Maybe not as much as you would as if it were an N network, but maybe that's what's going on. So you're saying the whole network kind of goes downhill.
No, it's just that one device. Because, like,
the
speed test app, tested a phone.
It's what that device can do.
My computer would even load the website.
Yeah, it's what that device can do. It may be slow for other reasons too. You know, Windows machines over time get slower. You might want to, rebuild it with the recovery disks. If it's just that machine, that's
I restored to factory.
You did restore to factory, and it's still slow.
Yeah, it's awful. Like I started to download an iOS 8.1 update.
Yeah.
Like it's like a 1.2 gigabyte file. I started at about 1:30 in the morning, and it finished at about 4:30 p.m. next day.
That's very frustrating. What's the? Tell me a little about the specs. It's an i5.
Yeah, it's the i5.
I mean, it's not that old a laptop that it should really be misperforming.
I know.
And you rebuilt it to scratch, and it still's doing that.
Mm-hmm. And I have, like, 3 programs on here. And I tried to install iTunes, and it took me probably...
I would look at the drivers and the software, make sure that you've got the latest versions. Something's does sound like something's wrong. I'm not sure what. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today, Leo Laporte, the tech guy? Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. The website, that's important. You got to know this, is techguylabs.com. So the way we do this, and by the way, there's no sign up. You don't have to pay. It's like the web used to be where you just, you know, you go somewhere and there it is. You click on links and things happen. It's kind of like that. We don't collect any information about you or anything like that. If you go to techguylabs.com, we've taken every day, every show, every hour, every question, divided up that way on older shows. After a few days when the show's been aired, we put audio and video up there so you can listen and watch. And you can go right to a question. For instance, we were talking, and we've been talking off the air, we've been talking in the chat room. You'll also find a link to the chat room at techguylabs.com, by the way. Techguylabs.com. We were talking about the previous caller who wanted to get visual voicemail. Peter wanted it on his phones, but he didn't. But he didn't want the, you know, the carrier's voice. You know, he wanted it to work better on across phones. And we talked about Google Voice, which I think is a great free service from Google. There's a company, and we mentioned this, and I've been looking at it, and this might be a good another choice called Youmail, youmail.com. They have apps for Android and iOS. It's a free service that works much like Google Voice. So you could, I don't know if you, I guess you use your number and forward calls to Youmail, which processes them. It will put transcriptions in your email. It will give you visual playback via a website. It will also do some nice things that, you know, Google Voice does, maybe even a little bit better than Google Voice. For instance, you can have individual greetings for any phone number. They also have some fun greetings that you can use to ditch callers you don't want. I like that. So the ability to say to a call, you know, to you have a phone number from a boyfriend you don't want to hear from anymore. And it will play, let me see if I can find it, because it's kind of cool. It'll play, you know, the number you have dialed is not in service. I love that. Here, let me play. This is, so you say, you know, if this old boyfriend calls, play this.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
See, that would work. The old boyfriend, you know, say, oh, she finally got tired of hearing from me, one hopes. They have greetings where they rickroll you. Where's you?
Hello, we're sorry, but no one is available to answer your call at this time.
They play the never gonna give you up. I like that. So that's Youmail. Free, they try to, it's a freemium service, and the chat room's telling me that they try to sign you up for human transcriptions, which is fine. I mean, I don't, you know, but essentially the base service is free. I like it when, there's a free service and a premium service. And the reason I like to see a premium service, the thing that worries me about voicemail from Google Voice, is that I worry that this is free. Google could just say at any time, yeah, as they have done many times with many services, we're tired of this. We're going to discontinue it. Now, there'd be howls because so many people use it. But I like seeing a company charge, frankly. I want to see them charge money because then there's a chance that they might, you know, stay in business. I kind of like that idea. $5 a month for premium privacy, productivity, and peace of mind for your personal life. Nice alliteration there. The business version is $10 a month. I shall explore it. I shall explore it. The chat room seems to like it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Moving on. Daryl, Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Daryl.
Leo.
How are you?
Well, Leo, I'm doing good up here in Asheville.
Good.
I'll give you a caveat, number one.
Okay.
You know, I haven't had a computer in 20 years, and Windows 95 was my last thing when...
Well, you'll be glad to know things have really improved since then.
Oh, man. Don't get me started. You know, back then, I had a Dell computer cost me $5,000 because of the Kobe earthquake.
Wow.
And RAM prices went through the roof.
I remember that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, here I am. I was given a Hewlett-Packard printer and scanner. And they are older, and the question is, okay, being retired and kind of like out of the loop,
See, wait a minute, you have a printer and scanner, but no computer.
Well, let me tell you, I have a Goodwill, and, you know, I'm retired,
yep.
I'm, poverty level here, one of these laptops that are Windows 7. Here's the question.
Good. That's good.
We'll talk. Leo, here's the deal.
Yes.
You guys are the gurus.
Yes.
Of the modern age.
Yes, we are.
Yes, you are.
Yes, we are.
Question is, will Windows 7 be backward compatible, back to XP?
For the printer.
And the scanner.
Should be. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Should be.
This is good hardware. It's an HP PhotoSmart and an HP scanner.
Yeah, I mean, let's not let the cart drive the horse. I mean, you obviously, are you getting the computer just so you can use the printer?
Yes. Well, wait a minute, dude. I'm talking Goodwill. $125 for a laptop and a Windows 7.
Have you tried it yet with the printer? Depends how old the printer is. There will almost certainly be Windows 7 drivers for it, unless it's as old as your old Windows 95 machine.
No. So you're saying that Windows 7 might drive these printers?
Yes. But how old is the printer?
Well, let's see here. It says Windows XP Professional Home Edition 2000 and the scanner, same thing.
It works with XP. You got it. It's not going to be a problem. The driver model is similar, and Windows 7 has an XP compatibility mode. I don't see any problem at all. Remember, XP, then Vista, then Windows 7. So Windows 7 is looking at a printer that came out for two versions earlier operating system, but that's not a big deal. That's one of the things Microsoft does well. In fact, it's one of the things that ties their hands, is that they really do want to provide compatibility. Remember, Windows is mostly used in business. We talk a lot about 1.5 billion users, and certainly there are a lot of home users. But really, let's be honest. What really Microsoft cares about, where the money comes from mostly, the lion's share comes from business. And businesses aren't going to buy a new printer every few years just because they get a new version of Windows. They want it to work. So I don't even know what our HP printer back here, what vintage it is, but I darn well expect when I get a new Windows machine, it's just going to work. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. But, you know, one way you can check it is log into the HP site and look up that particular device and see what version, look at the latest version of the drivers and see if it's compatible with Windows 7. That'll tell you if the hardware will work. So you go to HP site. They have a great drivers site. Go to their driver's site and then check your particular machine, the latest driver. Does it say Windows 7? If it does, you're golden. Even if it just says XP, you're probably all right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 ASK Leo, Matt in Santa Maria, California. That's the number he called. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing tonight?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Listen, I am a longtime PC user, my wife and I, and frankly, I've got a 10-year-old Dell desktop. I've got two laptops circa 2007. And frankly, it's time for a tech refresh. And yeah, I also have an iPhone 4, iPad 2. I find I'm doing most of my processing on that and when I'm away. And just trying to figure out whether it's more advantageous for me to make the complete cut over to Mac from PC, or whether I can do both. Frankly, my wife is a little scared to do that. She's very comfortable with that system, with PC, and I'm just trying to weigh the advantages and disadvantages right now.
Yeah. So you'd need to buy a new computer. That's a done deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so really it's just a question of if you can overcome your wife's reluctance to switch to Mac. It sounds like you want to switch to Mac.
I am convinced. The biggest thing for me is really, trying to, make sure I can access my older files. They're all,
Yeah, data's data. It's not going to be a problem on either side. Here's a good compromise, a marital compromise. And I mentioned this last couple of callers ago. You can run Windows well on that Mac. Windows runs beautifully on Macintosh.
Okay.
So, there's a couple of ways to do it. There's a program, Apple comes with a program called Bootcamp, that when you first get your new Mac, you run Bootcamp. Get a big enough hard drive to have two operating systems on it. You run Bootcamp, and it says, okay, great, we're going to download the drivers for this hardware. It's nice. They really handle this well, because only Apple makes the hardware, so they make the drivers. We're going to download Windows drivers for this hardware. Have a USB stick ready. Okay, got them, downloaded them. Let me divide the disk up. How much space do you want to allocate for Windows? I would say, minimum of 10 gigabytes. If you've got a big enough drive, you can allocate 500 gigabytes. If it's a terabyte drive, 250, 500 gigabytes. It just really depends how much data you're going to store on the Windows side. The Windows itself doesn't take more than a few gigabytes applications to 10. I've never run out of space with 10 because I keep all my data on the Mac side. But you'll have to make that decision. And then the key thing is you need a Windows installer disk with a good serial number. So that I buy Windows. I download and buy Windows. And it'll ask for that ISO or disk and then install Windows. Now, every time you turn on the Mac, it'll say, you hold down the option key. It says, okay, you want to boot Mac or Windows. Now, so when your wife uses it, it's a Windows machine. When you use it, it's a Mac. And you have the advantage, by the way, if you do that, of... if you have some Windows stuff that you need to use, it's available to you. So I feel like that's a good choice for a couple that's a split couple like that. Now, you can always buy a Windows machine, but it will never run Mac software. It's a one-way street.
Okay.
Only Macs can run Windows. Windows can't run Macs.
Is there any issues? I'm going to be working from home as well for the federal government, and are there any transfer issues if I go from a PC-based environment at work versus you run something on Mac at home?
Depends on file-wise. You can copy the files, no problem. Networks don't care what operating system. They're operating system independent. The only real question is if the program that was used to create those files is available on the Mac. So, for instance, if you use Microsoft Office, no problem. You'll be able to read and write Microsoft Office files on the Mac. If you used some CAD program that's unique to Windows that you can't get on the Mac, well, it's not going to be much help. So what kind of files are they? PDFs, docs, Excel?
Yeah, it's mostly going to be PDFs and Office.
No problem.
Files.
You'll have no problem at all. In fact, one of the things Apple does nicely is you don't even need to get a PDF app. On Windows, you have to download Acrobat or Reader from Adobe. On the Mac, it comes with Preview, which allows you to read and modify documents very easily, PDF documents. So I don't think you're going to have an issue. You're not using Microsoft Access, are you?
I am not.
Okay. The other issue is if you need to use Internet Explorer, and sometimes this is the case, we have to boot up Windows at home because one of our, I think, business services, I don't remember, it's QuickBooks or our payroll service requires Internet Explorer. And there's no Internet Explorer for the Mac. So if you have a federal portal you need to use that requires IE, you'll have to have Windows. But again, you can still buy a Mac and run it in Windows or Mac mode. In fact, there's a really nice feature. If you've installed Windows on your Mac, you can then use Parallels or VMware Fusion or VirtualBox to run it while you're running the Mac. So if you quickly need Internet Explorer, you can actually open Internet Explorer in the Mac environment and use it.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate the time, and good luck in your new life with your new bride.
That's nice. Thank you. Fortunately, we are a mixed marriage. We use Android, iPhone, Apples, and Windows machines, and we're comfortable with all of them. And one of the reasons I know Lisa's using a Mac, and she says she has one of the new iMacs, the beautiful 5K iMacs. She says, "But this darn payroll service, I got to use IE." I said, "No problem. Got the Dell. You're set." So this is a hangover from, I hate to say it, the old days. To require Internet Explorer is bizarre. But I always am very suspicious of a company that isn't updating its software, because that, you know, the security issues alone are mind-boggling. So I'm a mixed marriage. Heck, I'm a mixed person. I use it all too. So it's not a question in our family. Johnny in Fontana, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great. How are you, Johnny?
Pretty good. Congratulations on getting married.
Thank you.
Yeah, fun fact, I just proposed to my girlfriend on Thursday as well.
Congratulations, Johnny. Did she say yes?
Yes, fortunately.
Congratulations. I know. I can't imagine. No, I don't think so. Oh, that'd be bad. Good for you. Congratulations to you both. That's great.
Thank you. I got two questions. One might be just real quick and easy, but any advice?
Any advice for getting married?
Yeah.
Just two words. Just learn these words and you'll be safe. Yes, dear.
Okay.
Very important. She's always right.
All right, then I think I know the answer to the tech question.
Okay.
All right, so my fiance.
Yeah, I got to get used to saying that now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, she wants the Note 4 Edge, but I've been trying to talk her into
it. Oh, dear. Are you sure you want to marry this girl? Oh, dear. Really? She wants the Edge.
Yeah, she has a Note 2 right now, and she...
Here's what I would say. I have a Note 4, and I love it. Great phone. I reviewed the Edge, so I had it for a week or two.
Okay.
Can't say it adds any real value. It makes it hard to hold. It makes it hard to get a case. Yeah. Get her the Note 4. Absolutely has all the features of the Edge. The Edge is that silly little side screen. I don't see any reason to get that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I'm going to talk to the folks who do the hiring in your company. If they're not to hand, go get them. Get them to run over and listen to the radio, because I want to tell you about something that's going to make their life a heck of a lot better. It's called ZipRecruiter. You know, I'm sure by now that online job sites are a boon for anybody who's trying to fill a position at your company. They're great, but there's so many of them, and they all kind of talk to different audiences. Do you know which one's right for the job you're posting? What about one place you could go where you could post to 50-plus job boards with one click? And not just job boards, but the social sites too, Facebook and Twitter and Craigslist. What about ZipRecruiter? I'm sure they must have heard of ZipRecruiter by now. Post to 50-plus job boards with a single submission. You'll find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. You post once, you watch your qualified candidates roll in. And you know what you're going to love? No more phone calls or emails. All the responses go right into the ZipRecruiter easy interface. You can screen the candidates there, rate them, and hire the right person fast. So it's not just fast posting, it's fast in hiring. It is fabulous. We used it and we love it, and I want you to try it. They even have a resume database with more than 5 million resumes, so you might even find the job, the person you want right there. Works on mobile, so a lot of nowadays job candidates are on their mobiles. You get your own page for your site, a careers page. It's really great. I want you to try it. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. A free 4-day trial will give you access to everything on the site, and that's great. It's probably enough to hire that person, frankly. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy for a free 4-day trial to the best way to fill a position. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. You're going to love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, here performing tech surgery on the air live just for you. Jesse is in Long Beach, our next caller. Hi, Jesse.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. I'm calling in behalf of my wife. She's having problems with her iPhone 6 Plus.
Yes, dear.
She's complaining about pictures and videos. She doesn't have enough room on her.
You know why? She doesn't delete pictures and video when she's copying them to the computer, and it just fills up.
Oh, okay.
How big of an iPhone did she get?
She got the 16 gig.
16, yeah, that's the smallest, right? So it fills up faster.
But the old phone used to be able to take like 10,000 pictures, and this one you can only take 3,000 pictures and maybe like 2 or 3 videos.
Okay, so yeah. And it's probably a bad idea just to keep them on the phone forever, because what if you lose the phone?
Yeah.
Then you lost. Now you only lose 3,000 pictures. In the old days, you'd lose 10,000 pictures. So, yeah, there is less space. iOS 8 is bigger, and the pictures are bigger and nicer, and so there's less space for them. What was her old phone?
The 4S.
No, yeah.
The 5.
Yeah. So these are higher resolution pictures. Video is higher quality. So the key is, do you ever hook it up to a computer?
Yes, she does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So next time you hook it up to the computer and it copies all the photos, make sure you copy all the photos. It'll say, okay, do you want me to delete the old photos now?
Oh, okay.
And say yes. Free up space. She never says yes. She says, no, I like it because I want to show pictures to friends and family. I understand that. I'm going to give her some ways to do that, okay? So if she uses Facebook and you have the Facebook app on your phone, there's a setting in the Facebook app that says, copy all my pictures whenever I take them to a private, very important, private place on Facebook. Now all the pictures are on Facebook. She can share them with family and friends. Even if she just has the phone, she can open up Facebook and look at them on the phone, just as if they're on the phone, but they take up no space on the phone. They're all stored on Facebook. If she uses Google Plus, it'll do the same thing. If you like Microsoft, OneDrive will do the same thing. If she uses Flickr, Flickr will do the same thing. All of these, you download the app, SmugMug, I can go on and on, lots of apps. You download the app, you turn on photo uploading, and whenever you take, I use Google Plus. I happen to love that. If you've got a Google account, you already have a Google Plus account. You download the Google Plus app. It will upload every picture. It will upload every video privately. Don't worry. Don't get scared. Only you can see them. Now when you go to grandma's and you say, here's pictures of the baby, you know, you ever do that? They're still there. See, I know why you want to keep them on the phone, because you want to show people. But the problem is the phone can't, 3,000. Come on. 3,000 pictures is a lot of pictures.
She was used to 10,000, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so I'm glad you've been copying them to the computer. That's good. And by the way, be a good idea to copy them to Facebook or Flickr or both at the same time, because that way if the computer hard drive crashes, you lose your phone. You know, I've had heartrending calls from people. We had a call last year. Guy called up and said, my dog died a couple of years ago, and the only pictures I have of him are on my phone, and I just lost it. Is there any way? And I said, well, no, you have to make sure you back up those pictures, right? So those are precious, precious pictures. Make sure you back them up to the computer. But now do turn on the photo backup in Facebook, or turn on the photo. If you use Flickr, which is free, it's from Yahoo, Flickr, download the app. And turn on the uploading. You can share it with friends and family on Flickr, too. You can send them a link. Those are higher quality, by the way, than Facebook. Facebook squishes them a little bit. So if you want to preserve the full quality, I would use Flickr or Google Plus. But all of these are free, cost you nothing. And they give you basically unlimited storage. For instance, Flickr, it's a terabyte. Your phone is 16 gigabytes. This is 1,000 gigabytes.
Wow. Okay.
So you're not going to run out. 20 years from now, you'll call me and you say, I have great-grandchildren pictures, and I want to make sure. And I'll say, they're all there. So, okay. So start deleting them from the phone as you go. That's okay. Make sure, though, if you do that, that you have it turned on, that they're uploading not only to the computer but another source, so you have two copies. In fact, you can do Flickr and Facebook. The only thing I would do is if you have limited bandwidth, you know, you have a limit on how much data you can use on your phone, there's a box that says on Wi-Fi only. Make sure you check that. So it only uploads those pictures when you're home, and that okay. And that way it won't use any data. It won't use any of your data plan.
All right, Leo. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm glad we could save the day. Amazon does this too, by the way. Unlimited. Amazon says unlimited. You can have 10 terabytes. We don't care. Now, the thing to remember is that when you're storing it on a company's site, that it's only going to be backed up there as long as that company's in business. I figure Amazon, Microsoft, Apple does this too, by the way. You can turn on iCloud, but you have to pay for that. So I'm giving you free stuff. Facebook's going to be around in 20 years. Yeah. So all those places are safe. I actually do them, all of them. So I do OneDrive, which gives you unlimited storage if you're an Office user, which I am. I do to Flickr, unlimited, a terabyte of storage. I do it to Google Drive, terabyte. I have a terabyte there. That's, you're never going to run out of space. I can't tell you how common this is, by the way. This is so common. Very few people, I don't know why, very few people ever delete pictures from their iPhones. I guess you just want them all, right? Well, there's an alternative for you. Thanks, Jesse. Spivey in Alabama?
Atala.
Hi, Spivey.
Hey, Mr. Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Well, congratulations to you and yours.
We're very happy. Yeah, we're blissful right now. Yep.
Well, that's what it's going to take.
Yep.
I'm coming up on my 24th. Don't let me forget, 23rd, 24th.
Congratulations. Right. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Okay. Let me get to this before I drop off into a hole. I created a poker game, a live poker game for casinos.
Yeah.
Got it patented, got it GLI approved and all that, and I've got a couple of casinos interested in it, but I'm also, my question is, I'm wanting to try to get an app for it also.
Yeah, sounds like it should be an app. If people like it, it's a fun game. Now, if it's a betting app, like there's cash involved, you won't get it on Apple. Because
okay, if I go with it with just to play...
Yeah, just to play. It's just a game. It's just for fun.
Yeah, but yeah.
Then you can get it on Apple. You can get it on Android. So the next step for you is to find a developer, unless you are interested in learning how to write software for iPhones or Android phones.
No, sir.
So the next step for you is to find a developer, and there are lots of places you can go to find developers. There's websites like Elance. It's like freelance, but just one Elance.com. Programmers there. You can go there. You can say exactly what you're looking for and have people bid to do that, or you could say how much you're willing to pay. A lot of times these programmers are not in the U.S. Be prepared for that. Many of them are in Russia or Eastern Europe. What happened is that in countries where they have great universities with great technical colleges, great engineering programs, but maybe the economies aren't so robust as in Russia, there are a lot of out-of-work programmers. They're very well-trained, accomplished guys, and so they're looking for work, particularly in the West. So that's one way to do it. Now, it's really tricky to vet a programmer. So you're really going to want to... have a contract with them, and I don't have time to give you all the advice you need, but they're absolutely out there, and it's less than you think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go with Ryan in Covina, California. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan. Okay, well, I guess, let me see. I have the means of putting Ryan on hold. No, that didn't do it. Let's see. I don't know how anything works in this studio. Uh-huh. Next. Oh, I just hung up on two people. Greg and Heather, can you show me how this works? Greg in Dillon Beach, California. Hi, Greg.
Leo, after 20 years.
You're just around the corner. I was in Dillon Beach over the week.
Well, you know, I saw you go out to Hog Island in one of those sissy little kayaks or something with a barbecue. But a friend of mine and I went out there with just two paddles and wetsuits about 20 years ago, and that's how men do it.
Well, it was still scary.
Yeah, well, I forgot to say stupid men.
It was fun. I have to say, you live in a beautiful part of the world, not so far from us, right on the ocean there. Well, it is gorgeous, and we have Tamales Bay just down the road a piece. Yep. Great place for oysters.
Yeah, it's where Tamales Bay joins Bodega Bay. And actually, I was lying to... Well, I didn't lie to Heather, but it was a long story. I used to live there. I built a house above the ocean up in Oceana Maria.
Oh, I'm jealous.
I lived there for 20 years. Went to graduate school out there. But now I'm in Conifer, Colorado.
You're in Colorado. Oh.
Yes.
That's okay.
24 degrees, beautiful snow out here. And we also live in... My wife, Jen, and I live in Tampa also. So we go back and forth.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm calling to say I appreciate the 20-plus years of watching and listening to you. But more, you know, technically, I'm calling to say that there was mention some months ago of weak Verizon cell phone reception.
Yes.
And the potential availability of a femtocell, otherwise known as cell phone extender.
Yes.
And I, you know, without describing all my problems with, I like Verizon for cell phone, but, you know, I had troubles in Tampa, believe it, north of Tampa, troubles there in our particular location, and troubles here in Conifer. We're on the side of a mountain, 2.5 acres in the forest, and, you know, we're lucky we have electricity, let alone cell phone.
You know what's so funny? What? We are so spoiled. The idea that you could get a phone signal on the side of a mountain at all is amazing. I mean, we live in an amazing world. You're probably old enough to remember. I certainly am. When somebody had a phone in their car, it was like, woo, woo, you must be a millionaire, buddy. And that's when millionaire meant something. I mean, it was a big deal. And I remember the first... And they show this now in an ad, which is great. A phone, portable phone, Marty Cooper walking down the street with what looked like a giant 8-pound purse hanging off his, because he's got a mobile phone. So we've come a long way.
I had one of those, yeah.
Yeah, but now we're at the point where, gee, I don't get a signal in my Eagle's lair high above. What's wrong with this world?
Yeah, well, you're right, and I won't take any more time.
I don't mean to shame you, but I'm not by any means. I'm with you. It's like I'm out, and you know, in fact, we were just up at Calistoga, and I'm saying, I'm not getting any bars. It's like I'm in the woods. We are living in an amazing world where you basically have internet and phone access everywhere, almost everywhere you go. So you use one of these little femto cells, and every company offers these. You connect it to the internet in your house. Of course, you have to have internet, and then it acts like a cell phone site, a tower in your house. So you should get 5 bars with a femto cell, and then you'll be making calls through your internet connection.
It works great. We have one in Dade City, Florida, and one out here in Conifer. And the point I want to make is that you had said that the phone companies used to, and I think you're referring particularly to Verizon at the time, but the phone companies used to give them away, and now they may or may not. But the point is that I was able to talk them into getting them for free.
It kind of depends how much they want to keep you, right? And so you know, this is the thing. It's unpredictable how they're going to react. You get sent to a customer retention expert who then has has a lot of leeway as to what he or she can offer you. But
you want to hear my brief story on that? I knew that in advance because of your show.
Yeah.
I called them up, explained the problem. They referred me to a retention. And the first thing that came back from Verizon, we have a $25 off coupon.
Yeah.
And then it went, you know, without all the explanation, to $75 off.
Yeah.
And I was basically saying, look, I'm not going to pay you to provide me cell phone service. And then it came for free. Well, FedEx it to you have 2 days from now.
Good. So sometimes it works to hold out, you know. But also, they're looking at your history, how long you've been with them, how much money you spend every month. They're aware of every detail and whether you're a good customer.
I'm sure.
And obviously, you've got a number of Verizon accounts. You've got two different homes. They see thousands of dollars a month, and they're looking at you, and they're going, cha-ching, and they're going to make you a better offer than they're going to make somebody who's, you know, pay-as-you-go guy who might have missed a payment.
I wondered where that cha-ching came from.
Hey, you actually heard it, huh?
You know, as great as everybody says, and thanks for 20 years of this stuff and or more.
My pleasure,
Greg. Talk to you later.
All right, enjoy your Eagle's Lair. High above, man, wouldn't that be cool? Sometimes you make that trade-off. We have to just kind of be aware of it. Sometimes you want to choose a beautiful place to live, but it's rural. And companies are not highly incented to get internet service out to you. There may not be a cell tower nearby. So you're going to have to enjoy the trees and the sound of the crick. And you're not going to have a phone ring. But that ain't so bad. It's funny how that we've gotten so so tied to the whole idea. Sometimes you wish the phone wouldn't ring. There's also that. I was talking to David Pogue, who remember wrote for the New York Times for years, and he now has he runs the Yahoo Tech channel, and he has a great new book on tips, things that everybody ought to know, but many don't, even computer experts. And he said, here's one I bet you don't know, Leo. If your phone's ringing and you're on the radio and you want to stop it, just grab it, because chances are almost any phone, you're going to hit a button when you grab it. And almost any phone, that'll stop the ringing. So don't, you know, he says, I see people looking on the phone and how to stop the ringing, which I just did. He says, just grab it firmly in your meaty paw and let it hit a button of any kind. And then almost always that stops the ringing. See, you learn something on this show. Moving right along, Cal in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Cal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I would just... I wanted to pass some information along. I followed the recommendation of Steve and you switching our computer accounts on Windows to user as default.
Steve Gibson, our security guru, and I both recommend, especially if you're using Windows XP, not running as an administrative user.
Right. And it's, you know, it's a great idea. I recommend it too. But I did run across a problem I wanted to share with you doing that. And what happened was I was troubleshooting a frozen computer problem I have with a laptop. And in the process, was directed to go to Documents and Settings folder.
Yeah.
And that is only in the administrative account, the original administrative account, that is now a user. And I was not allowed to make any changes, even, you know, without credentials.
Right. So let me talk a little bit about that. Windows, as a multi-user operating system, assigns ownership to every file. And if you're not the owner, and this you would want this, if you're not the owner, you can't modify that file.
Right.
If you're the administrator, you're God. And this is why we recommend you don't run as administrator. The administrator can do anything, including modify other people's files. So it's always a good idea to run as a limited user. So my recommendation is to, you've got the account that you've used day in, day out as an administrator. Mm-hmm. And now you don't want to get rid of that account. You just want to degrade it.
Right.
So what you do is you create a new administrator account, log into it, degrade the old account to user. Now, you'll have to log in as administrator sometimes to claim the files in there. You know what? We got to take a break. Let me talk a little more when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, MP3 players, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Website, techguylabs.com. We were talking to Cal in Erie, Pennsylvania, And he did what we had recommended. Are you using XP, Cal?
No, I'm using Windows 7.
Yeah. One thing I noticed with Windows 8, and this is probably true with Windows 7, I'm going to try this and we'll see. We had said, and I stand by this, that if you do not run as an administrator, but run instead as a standard user, sometimes some versions of Windows call it a limited user, that you will block 90%, mm-hmm. 90% of malware exploits coming through Internet Explorer or through the web browser. That's pretty much that's a huge benefit.
Absolutely.
For a little bit of inconvenience. Now, that means as a non-administrator, you can't install software. That's one of the real benefits of it. So you either have to use administrator password or log into the administrator account to do things like that. And that's a little inconvenient. But for instance, our 12-year-old, he is not an administrator. That'd be crazy to give a 12-year-old administrator privileges. So he'll say, "Hey, Leo," I say, "What? Can you install this for me?" Okay. And I have to come over and use my administrator password. Now, you've come up with kind of an unusual situation. You're using the limited user account, and somehow you can't open files that are owned by somebody else, basically.
Yeah, it's located in the old administrator account.
Okay.
You know, documents and settings.
So you either need to be the old... Did you delete any accounts?
No.
No, good man.
What I found out is, you know, is you have to reassign that to administrative status. Your changes or whatever you need to do, and then back out of it again. And that's all. But it was just really kind of shocking that it wouldn't, you know, there was no way I could get into it other than to do that. Even if it asked for your credentials as an administrator, it still would not let you make changes to documents and settings in the user account.
Yeah, because it's more than just that... Basically, you don't want to make it documents in the administrator account. Well, I would reclaim those and move them over.
Oh, you can move them?
Yeah.
All right.
So look, if you Google how to reclaim files in Windows, it's not easy, but it's not impossible. It's just a few steps.
Okay.
To take possession, or maybe even Google take possession of documents in Windows, because any person could take possession of them. So you as administrator can assign them to anybody, and then you won't have to ever do this again.
That's fantastic. I really appreciate that.
And basically, from now on, when you're going to create documents as in the user account, that user account will always be able to access those documents. It's only older documents that were created by other accounts that you won't be able to access. But just take ownership. It's in the security tab. It's a few steps. I don't want to go through them on the air in case I get them wrong or you get them wrong. But you can Google it. It's very easy. That's actually probably the right phrase. Take ownership of files in Windows. And all multi-user operating systems have this feature. You know, if you think about it, a multi-user operating system in its earliest incarnation was a Unix system at a college or a business where you would log in, you'd have access to your files, but you wanted to make sure that you didn't have access to somebody else's files. So every file has ownership. And it's actually in the file metadata that says this file is owned by this user. And you can assign privileges to read it or write it, depending on who owns it. It's a fairly straightforward thing. We'll put a link also in the show notes, techguylabs.com. It's a fairly straightforward thing to do. But just so understand, when you're doing this security process of saying, okay, I'm not going to run as a administrator anymore, I'm going to run as a limited user, make sure you do create an administrator account and have the password for that. You know, one good thing to do, take the same password you use to log in to your user account and reverse it. I did this for my mom because she said, I don't want to have to remember another password. I said, no problem. Use the same password you already remember and just reverse it. That's enough. You know, believe me, it's not an issue. If somebody has access to your computer, that's the least of your worries is your password. So just reverse it. That way, you, if you're going to install software, will have to take an extra step, and that's the whole point. And malware won't have the permissions of the administrator. You don't want malware to have all permissions. That's a bad thing. Now, I was mentioning on my new Dell system, I'm going to try this. You can up the UAC to a higher level of security than normal. And I've just turned all the security up to maximum, continuing to use administrator account to see if that works. Because it is a hardship. I understand it. It makes everything a little bit more difficult if you're not an administrator. But remember the trade-off between convenience and security. That's always going to be there. Mac, people ask me, should I do this on a Mac? You don't need to, because Apple does it anyway. Apple, if you're going to do anything that modifies a file or a system file, it will ask you for your administrator password anyway. Even if you're an administrator on an administrator account, it'll say, well, you better enter your password. That's I consider that a sufficient warning that you're doing something dangerous. And, of course, malware doesn't know that password, so can't execute that. Let's move on. Vran or VRAN in Walnut Creek. Is it VRAN?
No, it's actually my name is different. I'm Vlad.
Vlad.
Right.
Vlad, nice to talk to you,
yeah.
Vlad.
Yeah, nice to talk to you too, Leo. I'm really enjoying your show.
Thank you.
Every time.
Thank
yeah.
you.
So I just want to ask you a question. So I have a car with a USB input, and I can beautifully play MP3 and WMA files
right.
from any device.
Right.
But my goal is to play, let's say, Spotify from my Android phone.
Right. And so you want to, instead of playing music off the drive of the phone, you want to play a streaming music service into this car speakers.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
And believe me, I did my homework and try Google it, and I cannot find the solution.
Yeah. Normally, this is accomplished using Bluetooth. If you have a car that has a Bluetooth support, there are two Bluetooth profiles. There's the Bluetooth headset profile, which is used for talking. So does your car support Bluetooth?
No, unfortunately not.
All right. That's why you're using USB.
Right.
So just to finish that thought, there's the talking profile, but there's also the audio content profile. It's called A2DP. And that does a beautiful job of picking up whatever's streaming on your smartphone and playing it through the speakers. The problem with USB is that some phones, but not all phones, most phones will not stream that audio out of the USB port. They stream it out of the headphone port. So what kind of phone are you using?
It's a Samsung Galaxy S4.
Okay. An iPhone, you could get audio off the USB port. The 30-pin port that Apple used for years and now the Lightning port do have audio on that port, but the Samsungs do not. Android phones do not. So does your phone – now, your stereo system has USB. It means it probably also has an aux jack, right? An aux.
No, unfortunately not. Just only USB input.
All right. Okay. All right. Does it have – do you have a cassette player?
No, I have an FM player, but I don't really want to use a transmitter in the receiver.
Those are, yeah, if you're in any urban area, they're terrible. If you're in a rural area, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
Walnut Creek, you're going to get every San Francisco radio station. There's not
right.
going to be any yeah. way for you to use that.
Yeah.
All right, this is a good question. We're going to have to take a break. Keep listening on the air, Vlad. And if I can find an answer for you, I will. I'm going to query the chat room. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. I have spoken, chatted with my brain trust in the fabulous tech guy chat room. And they have conclusively agreed with my initial thoughts, which is, Vlad, there's nothing you can do about it. So Vlad is driving a car, which very nicely has a USB jack. And that's great. You know, the idea there, you could put a thumb drive with music on it. The USB, the stereo system would say, oh, I see you have inserted a storage unit with some MP3s. Or he said it will also do Windows Media. And I'm going to play it back. And if your phone will do that, and sometimes, not all phones will do this, but most phones, when you plug it into a USB jack, will show up as storage with stuff on it. So that works fine. But he says, but wait, I plugging in my phone into my car stereo, what I really want to do is play back Spotify because it's an unlimited music collection and I can listen to it on my phone. But how do I get into my stereo? I don't have Bluetooth. Oh, well, that's one way. I don't have an auxiliary jack, like a little plug that could plug into the headphone speaker. I only have this USB connector. Well, the USB connector is not going to work because it needs to see storage. It needs to see a hard disk, in effect, a drive that it can read and mount. That ain't Spotify. Maybe you could theoretically think of something that might plug into the audio jack of the phone. And no, it's not. It somehow magically turn what's coming out of Spotify into a USB hard drive. It's not going to. No, there's no way to do it, in other words. So you'll have to go into a car stereo place and either get a auxiliary jack added. That actually won't be hard to do. There probably is an input on the back of that head unit for some other input. You just got to get that out into the glove compartment or get a new stereo, car stereo. It's odd that you have USB and not aux, but if that's the case, then adding an aux jack, just a headphone jack that you plug in, that would work quite nicely. And that's why I asked if you had a cassette player, because the next best thing, if you have a cassette player, Radio Shack and others sell a little device that looks like a cassette, but it's got a wire coming out of it. You plug into the audio jack, and then you tune your car stereo to your cassette, and lo and behold, you got Spotify. I used that for years with pretty good results. You're right, the FM transmitter, which is another option, you could easily plug into the headphone jack, but it doesn't work well in areas with a lot of radio signal. And he's in the San Francisco Bay Area. That's one of the worst. A lot of signals there. So I think you need to, you could probably do it yourself. We'll put a link in the show notes to a website with how to do it yourself. But I would suggest going to a car stereo company. I just want an aux plug. Is there a way to get into the back, look at my head end, see if there's an aux input? There probably is. It's just not manifested in your control. You know, in your controls, they'd never wired it to the glove compartment, and then you'd be able to do that. Ryan in Covina, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I have a question. I work for the California Department of Correction in the prison, and we have to leave our phone in the car. We can't bring it in.
Yeah.
So my question is there any way I could get messages or phone calls if I miss a call or miss a text?
You mean in the prison?
No. Well, I have access in my I have access on my internet, my email.
Ah. So you want to check to see if you can log in on the computer. What kind of phone do you have?
I have an iPhone 6 Plus.
All right. So I've used for years, and I love it. It's worked on Android, and I think they've now added it to iPhone, something called Push Bullet.
Push Bullet?
Push Bullet, which is probably okay. Not something you want to tell the warden about, but that's probably not a good name for something to be used in a prison. But the idea is, it allows you to get a notification on your device and then via the internet send it to – and I add a push bullet extension to Chrome, but there's other ways to do it as well. And so you're at your computer and you'll get all the calls, all the texts notified.
Is it going to go through my email or
– No, it just does it through the internet. So you have to – now, can you install software on the computer you're using inside?
No, I can't. The only way I can check it is through my email. Right now I have Google Voice.
Well, that'll work too. I don't know how well it works on the iPhone, but Google Voice, if you have people call your Google Voice number or you associate your iPhone number with Google Voice, when you get a text message, the only thing it won't work with is Apple's own messages. You'd have to have a Mac for that.
Well, I have to have a Mac for that.
Yeah, for messages. But as long as you can get people to text you, not messages you, but text you to the number that you've provided, and it could be the Google Voice number, it could be your own number, those text messages will be passed along via Google Voice on the – you can go onto the internet site. And use.
I tried doing that before where I can't find a way where I could forward the text messages to my –
Well, Apple's own messages – sometimes they call it iMessages, is only going to work with a Mac.
Oh, okay.
It's not going to work with – Apple is really just saying, look, this messages only works with iPhone, with Apple devices, iPhones and Macs. Who's your carrier?
AT&T.
Okay, good. AT&T, Dr. Mom's telling me, has a web-based interface to check your calls and messages.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. So log into your AT&T account and check. That would be just right through the web. That would be through the web page.
So all I need to do is log on to the AT&T website, and
yeah.
I could get any missed calls or missed messages?
Yeah, I'll have to figure out how to do that. But it says that Dr. Mom says AT&T will forward calls and text messages to you via the web.
By the way,
you won't be able to talk on the web, but you'll at least see that you got the message.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I always miss calls and text messages.
Yeah.
I work 8 hours a day and, that's a lot of
fun. Yeah. I think this is a good solution.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as you can access the computer, you should be able to check to see. It's called their VM Viewer. We'll put a link in the show notes to the AT&T page. It says, manage your voicemail at home or on the go. Ever wish you could see a list of your voicemails and choose which one to listen to first? This is an app. This great app lets you do that by accessing your AT&T voicemail or Unified Messaging voicemail from a qualifying wireless. It works for iPhone. So I'm going to have to try this. I have not tried it. I wonder if I have to pay extra for it. No, it doesn't. It looks like you install this on your phone and it does it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it's worth a try. And if we find any other solutions, we'll put them on the webpage, techguylabs.com.
Okay. Well.
All right, Mike. Nice to talk to you. 8888 Ask Leo. Next, we're going to Starla. Oh, maybe not. Starla, hang on. You'll be right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, built to perform tech surgery. Let's see. I picked her up, but I didn't talk to her. Starla in Oceanside. Hi, Starla.
It's Darla.
Darla.
Thank you.
Hi, Darla.
Awesome.
Sorry about that.
I have a good question for you.
Okay.
I just bought a brand new computer, took it out of the box, and when I looked at all the specs on it, I bought it online. It's an HP Pavilion. It said it had 2 microphones in it, and I currently have an HP Envy, the older one without the touch screen.
Mm-hmm.
And this has all the bells and whistles and more memory and all of that.
Yeah.
And I do podcasting and podcast radio.
That's great.
And when I got it, I went and looked, and it only has 1 input, and it has a headphone microphone on it.
That's the new thing. Yeah.
But
so it's both. It's a headset, Jack.
I have to get one?
Well, it's a headset, Jack. It's a 3-ringer. And so it's more than just you can use it for headphones. If you plug in headphones, you'll hear. But if you have an appropriate device for it, you plug it in, it will also work as a microphone. And typically, those are the Skype headsets. They have a microphone on them and a phono jack. Now, this is by far the worst way to get audio into your computer. Even on your Envy, it wasn't a good solution because it's an analog input.
Right.
So not every mic. What kind of mics do you use?
I use Shure mics. It's a talk show. It's about the outdoors. It's not a lot of music and stuff. It's on AM radio.
Do you need 2 microphones, or are there 2 people talking?
No. I only need 1 microphone me.
Yeah. So it's designed. How did you hook it up, your Shures? You would hook them into the...
I had a mid-end headset that had a mic attached to it. It was about $120.
Yeah.
And it had...
Did it have an XLR plug coming out of it? Or what kind of plug did it have coming out of it?
It was an XLR. It was just a regular
like, phono plug.
Just a regular plug, but it had one for headphones and one for mic.
Ah, it has two. I get it.
Yeah.
So the more modern system, by the way, Apple does this too. They want, I don't know, I guess it's a way to save money. The more, all of the modern computers, my new Dell does this too. They have one hole and it does double duty. And with the appropriate headset, which will have only one plug, you won't work with that old Shure. It'll have one plug and three rings on that plug. And two of them are left and right channel audio and one of them is microphone.
Okay.
So your existing Shure headset will not work with that.
That's okay, because I use a Comrex for my broadcast radio.
And you plug the Shure into the Comrex directly?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what I recommend is not using the audio jack on any computer for high-quality recordings, because there's a lot of buzz and noise that can be introduced with that. I usually recommend a USB interface. And there are lots of these that will take any mic. You can even use professional-grade mics with an XLR connector, as we use on the radio show, and connect these into these devices that then take the audio signal from the mic and turn it into digital data outside the computer, and those bits come through the USB port into the computer. And that's by far a better way to do it. Because it's usually a better digital-to-analog converter or analog-to-digital converter, for one thing. But also it's getting it outside of the computer, which eliminates some of the RF noise and so forth. You can almost certainly get, if you want to keep using your Shure, a mechanical connector, Radio Shack or somebody, that has two inputs and will come out into one output that will go into your computer. It'll be, you know, $1.50. It's a cheap and a simple thing to do. But I wouldn't recommend...
Okay, well, it doesn't matter either way. I mean, I must have 8-10 headset microphone configurations.
Probably some of them have a single mini plug that comes in, will fit
they
that.
None of them do.
None of them, yeah, they're all older. Yeah, all the new ones do. But again, not how I recommend rolling anyway for best voice quality.
The best is to get a USB
interface. Shure actually makes a very good one. I think it's under $100, and then you can use any Shure mic, even the professional grade Shure mics, and they'll plug right into it. There are other companies. M Audio makes one. What do we use, John? What do we send out now? We used to send out M Audios. Now we send out something from a company called Focusrite. It's called the Scarlett, and that has two mics in. On that one, but not that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not that that's
necessary. Well, that would work for me when I do remote.
Yeah. So Focusrite Scarlett, we'll put a link in the show notes to that. All of these are relatively inexpensive, under $100. But what's nice about doing it this way is then you can use professional-grade mics, which will give you a better sound, frankly.
Awesome. Well, I was just worried about having to send this computer back.
No. You know what? All the computers do. My Dell does the same thing. One mini plug that does dual duty, both audio out and microphone in.
Right. And I was sitting there cringing, thinking, am I going to do radio on earbuds?
No. But notice that's one of the reasons this changed. That's exactly right. That's how earbuds work, aren't they? So really it was the use of smartphones that changed all this. Everybody got used to the idea of, one plug fits all.
Right.
And so the HP and Dell and everybody else said, why are we putting two plugs in? We could save a lot of room. Now, we've got a link, and we'll put it on Amazon, to a converter that will do this for you for $6. Actually, this is eBay, $6.95. Mono price will have them, too. It takes basically a microphone input and stereo headphone inputs and turns it into a single three-ring mini jack, mini plug. That will fit.
That's great.
So that'll work too. So that way, all those old headsets will work fine.
Perfect.
I just gave you five different ways. So that's exciting. So you do a radio show and you also do a podcast.
I do.
That's great.
It's all about the outdoors, everything from archery to water skiing.
Love it.
So been on the air 15 years.
Wow, you're an old timer.
I am.
All about,
I'm one of the only women who does an outdoors radio show.
I love that. What's the? Is there a website?
I'm just getting it up. It's a long story. I was in a bad car accident and was off the air for 3 years.
I'm sorry.
And I'm just getting back on the air. No,
good.
It's great. I'm
good.
Great.
Good.
I'm able to do everything, and it was really bad, like roll over five times.
Ay, caramba.
So anyway, going back on the air and managed to get my same station that I was on for 15
nice.
Years.
That's
same
great.
Time.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's all awesome.
They must love you.
So, well, I won Media of the Year two times from the Arizona Game and Fish Department, so
that's
not
nice.
Too bad.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you get the website, call back. We'll tell everybody about it.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to
all
you.
All right.
Take care, Darla.
All right, I appreciate your show. Let me tell you, I learned a lot.
That's what I'm here for. And maybe I'll learn something about archery from you and fishing.
Okay.
Thanks, Darla.
I'll take you fishing.
Okay. I'd love to, actually. Brandon in Fayetteville, North Carolina. You're next. Hi, Brandon. Oops.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Hey, doing good. Hey, yeah. Very quick. You know, I watched the New Year's thing that you guys had done.
Yeah, 24 hours of 2015.
And I think the chat room or, you know, some of your fans are a little too nitpicky about the whole shaving the head thing.
I agree. Hey, hang on. I got to take a break. We'll be back and take your call when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I did shave my head. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. Last segment of the show, though, so don't call now. But do save that number because you might want to call next week when I'm back. With lots more tech help. You can also do remember our website, techguylabs.com. It's there all the time, 24/7. No subscription necessary, no sign up. It's just all the questions, all the answers, easy to search. We've got a good little search tool there, techguylabs.com. Now, Brandon, you're now my favorite person because you said I didn't need to shave my head. I did anyway. We did it for charity. We did it for UNICEF, raised $75,000 for UNICEF. So I feel good about it. And, you know, it's nice because the hair is growing back.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah. Thank God. Yeah, because, you know, I like having hair. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like a little hat that's always with you. Now, one thing that ain't going away is a tattoo, but that's another story for another day. What can I do for you? What can I do for you?
I'm actually a teacher, and I'm calling in regard to a teacher friend of mine. She had a little external hard drive, and unfortunately, she, I guess, bent the pin off the enclosure. And I didn't think it was a big deal. I thought maybe it was just a laptop drive inside the enclosure. And I popped it open, and, you know, it was on, like, this little data board. But the good news is she found another drive, like, completely identical. The serial numbers and everything matched up.
Good.
So I switched the data board for her.
Yeah.
And it plugs into the computer, but I can only see it in, like, Device Manager. So we can see what the files are.
Oh, that's not good.
Mm.
So all hope is not lost, but so let me ask you a couple of questions. So when you opened it up, and you're right, and most of the time, these USB drives inside there is a laptop drive. Sometimes the bigger ones is just a desktop drive. Mm. But you opened it up and you saw a circuit board. That means it's a SSD, a flash drive.
Mm.
And was the plug from the outside plugged right into a connector on that circuit board?
Yeah, it was on a USB port, one of those.
But that was wired into the circuit board. It was part of the circuit board, or was it separate to the circuit board?
It was separate from the drive.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So when you remove the drive, what kind of interface does the drive have?
It's got that funky new USB port. It's like, it's really flat and long.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is not unusual. In fact, I would guess that this is a standard connector. That you probably, so what you did is you replaced the outside part,
mm-hmm.
and you plugged that old drive into the external box, but mm-hmm. it still doesn't work.
Right, and if I remember correctly, the device manager said it was like unallocated space or something like that.
That's not good.
Mm.
It could be that in the damage done to that connector, there was damage done to the drive as well.
Mm. Okay.
I'm wondering again, though, if you really need to buy a new external case for it, or if that little SSD board has a standard connector on it. Because if that's a standard connector, and I'm not sure exactly. You say you recognize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a Toshiba drive, and I mean, and it spins up. I hear the disc spinning when I plug.
Wait a minute. So there is a drive.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a terabyte drive.
It's a spinning drive.
Yes, sir.
And it's attached. So I'm confused because I thought you said the drive was a circuit board.
No, okay, so, you know, it's in one of those little tiny pocket external drives. It's a terabyte,
Here's what you need, and it's only $35. You go to newertech.com, and they sell something called a USB 3 universal drive adapter. It's not meant to be used on a regular basis, but it is meant to be used in exactly this situation where you have a drive in an external container. The external part has died, or maybe the drive was in another computer. So you want to take a bare drive, and you can connect it, and it has a huge variety of different connectors. It's got IDE, ATA, serial ATA or SATA, and USB 3 connectors, including for laptop drives, power. So it will. There are very few drives. I would look at the connectors that they offer on this thing. There are very few drives that you can't connect to this thing. And then on the other end of it, USB cable. Now I wouldn't use it on a regular basis, but I would certainly be enough to pull the data off of this drive.
Sounds great.
And find out if it's working. That's $40. It's a lot of companies make these, but this is the one I use. It's from a company called NewerTech, NewerTech. And you sound like you're the tech guy. So any tech guy should have one of these because it's often the case that you need to take a drive out of something and put it into something else and turn it into a USB drive. I'm not sure what kind of connector. It sounds like it might be an eSATA connector or a SATA connector. I'm not sure what you said long and flat. That sounds like a SATA connector to me. But I'm not sure. So look, before you buy, look at this and see if it'll connect to the drive. Wayne in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Wayne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I hope you can hear me all right.
I hear you great.
Okay. I have a question. Maybe you can help me. I moved into a mobile home that I put on some property, and it's never had cable TV or any services, any telephone or anything hooked up to it. And I need to get access to the internet, and I don't know if I have to have a phone line installed with a copper line in order to get DSL. Is that true?
That is true. For the traditional internet service providers, you either have to have a cable, you know, cable TV coax, or a twisted pair copper from the phone company. But there are other kinds of internet service providers. There are wireless or WISP, wireless internet service providers, who will use microwave or other line of sight stuff, WiMAX, that can get to a place that doesn't have any wires. Now, if your home is distant from the road, then you would have to trench from the road to your home if you wanted to put cable or DSL in.
Right. And the reason I don't want to go with cable is because the people that usually install cable are, you know, jerks.
How far from the road are you?
About 100 feet.
So I'll give you my experience in the country. We had a home in the country, and it was about 500 feet from the road, and we were expected to do the trenching ourselves at the cost of several thousand dollars to get cable in there.
Right.
So we went with satellite. You certainly can go with satellite internet. You need a wireless internet if you're not willing to trench out to the road.
Yeah, and that's fine. I just don't know what my choices or what my options are.
Well, the other choice would be the phone company, and you know, you probably do want phone service out there.
Yeah, and they want to offer, you know, a plan with Fios, you know, the Verizon.
Hey, I'd go for that.
And a plan, but I don't have much money to spend on.
Ah, you don't have the monthly. Yeah, the Fios is the cream of the crop. And also the question is, do they trench out the 100 feet, or are you responsible for that?
Yeah, but see, I can only afford something like $25 a month for, say, DSL or...
Well, Verizon offers inexpensive DSL as well, but the real question is who's gonna do the wire? Are they going to do it or you? How are they going to get that wire out there? And they so that's the conversation you have to have first. I want a phone line out here. I don't have a phone line. Will you bring me a phone line? And if they say they'll do it, don't just get the phone line, and then you can go to DSL Extreme or any other third party that offers low cost internet. DSL Extreme, I think they have a $20 plan. They have some low cost plans, and they'll ride right on top of the Verizon wire. You don't have to get Fios. But the first issue for you is, how do I get a wire out to my house? Either a cable connection, you don't want that. All right, well, then a phone company has to do it. And who pays for getting that wire out there? If they pay for it, you're golden. Just say, good, I want Lifeline service. I want the cheapest phone service, but you need to get a wire out there. They may be required by local regulators to do that. I don't know. Once you get that, next step, you can get the internet service on top of it. So if you don't, yeah. I mean, if you could afford Fios, that's a great solution. And I wonder if they would trench the fiber out, though. I bet they wouldn't. I bet they wouldn't. So just say, I want dial-up. And you can get inexpensive dial-up, not just from Verizon, not just from the carrier, but from third parties. Hey, we're out of time. Thank you, Nathan Staten, our musical director, Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger. I'm Leo Laporte. Have a great Geek Week. We'll see you next time on The Tech Guy. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy Show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, The Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.